And please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Vito F. from Media Speaker Group.
All right. My name's Vito. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 7th, 2010, so I had 5 years a couple months ago. My home group is the Media Speakers Group. It's a group that meets, we're just outside of Philadelphia, so about 20 minutes south of the airport. It's a group that we started about a year and a half ago, and its format is similar to this one. It's an hour speaker meeting. We started it, I don't know if you care, but we started it because we found that this format is conducive for the newcomer. So when someone is just coming in and they can come in, kind of sit down, sit back, and hopefully get to hear some kind of message of hope without having to kind of put their hand up and share. So if you're anything like me, when I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm fairly new, we sit in a circle, and sometimes there's that expectation that I'm going to have to say something. So what happens for me is I start thinking about what I'm going to say. Right, I'm not necessarily focused on what someone is sharing or something that may very well help me in my sobriety, but I'm all of a sudden, you know, formulating this great share that I'm going to say when it gets around to me. And so that's why we like this format, because the new guy can just show up, sit down, sit back, and hopefully get to hear a decent message. So that's my sobriety date. That's my home group. I do have a sponsor and, you know, someone that I'm accountable to on a regular basis. And I say that because that hasn't always been the case in my sobriety. So there have been periods in my sobriety where I have been sponsoring, you know, several guys and not really accountable to anyone above me. No kind of sponsor, nothing like that. But I'm running around sponsoring people, you know, hearing fifth steps, the whole nine. But I'm not really taking direction from anybody, you know. So that's not the case today, thankfully. So I am accountable to someone here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like, for me. I can remember one of the first times I think that I ever felt the feelings, the feeling that alcohol produces. And I remember being somewhere around the age of 12 or 13. I remember, you know, running around with the kids in the neighborhood, and we had these little cups that were filled with orange juice and vodka. And I remember having the straw in these cups. For whatever reason, this memory is very vivid for me. I don't know if it was the first time that I got drunk or not. It was one of the first times. And I remember standing at the end of this driveway, and you know, I had gotten enough liquor in me to where I had felt the effects. And I remember this feeling that kind of washed over me. And you know, for the people that are non-alcoholic, I don't know how to accurately describe that feeling. And even for the people that are alcoholic, I don't know how to accurately put that feeling into words. I can tell you that when I drink, when I get high, I feel more like a complete person. I feel whole. And the same is true when I'm not drinking. I feel incomplete. I feel like there's something missing from my life. Sobriety is most definitely my problem. When I start to sober up, all of a sudden I'm like real uncomfortable. I'm kind of like, where do I put my hands when I'm talking to you? What did I just say? You know, for the next hour, I'm thinking about, what did I just say? You know, I should have said it this way. Why didn't I say it that way? When I see this person, I'm going to say this. Just very kind of like uncomfortable. Everything is weird. Walking into a grocery store to buy something is very weird. I'm thinking about, what am I going to say to the register, the person behind the register, right? Do I take my card out now to pay, or do I wait until they ring me up, then I take my card out, right? Can anybody relate to what I'm talking about? Okay, it's like this constant thing is going on. I'm just very uncomfortable. I think people are constantly looking at me and judging me. They probably aren't, right? That's kind of like how my alcoholism shows up. And you give me a couple of drinks, and that all that kind of just falls by the wayside. You know, I'm kind of like, all right, things are good. I'm not really suffering in that way anymore. And that's more or less what alcohol does for me. So I began to discover that at a young age, and, you know, and much like anybody else, you know, that kind of thing progressed, became more and more frequent. And around the age of 19 is when I first began experiencing some kind of consequences as a result of my alcoholism. What that first consequence looked like for me was my father has a business in South Philadelphia. And my father, you know, based upon my name, you can probably guess that I'm Italian, right? And my father's old school Italian type dude, right? He waited until he was a little bit older to start having kids. So he's like considerably older. I'm 28 now. My father's 71, right? So he's like old school Italian guy, right? From the Italian market in South Philly. That's where he lived his whole life. With that kind of attitude comes this, you know, and I don't know if this is present in other cultures. I know my experience, right? And it was kind of like this whole kind of like almost like codependent kind of like, if I can just keep him close, if I can just keep my son close, who I love so much, he's going to be okay, right? If I could just keep him close. And much of you know that's not the case. So what my father would do is he had this business in South Philly, and he said, you know, come work for me, right? There wasn't a whole lot of work getting done. But he felt like if he had me at his office, then he would be able to keep an eye on me. But as I said, that wasn't really the case. So one day, I had gone a couple days without drinking, and he asked me to go, you know, run this errand. I got in my car, and I pulled up to a stoplight at 16th and Oregon in South Philly, and the next thing I knew, I came to, and there's a crowd of people standing around my car, and there's a cop banging on my window with his baton, right? And all my doors were locked, and you know, there's a cop banging on my window, a crowd of people standing around. And I had no idea what had just happened. And what had just happened was I had a grand mal seizure behind the wheel of a car because I was detoxing, and I didn't even know it. And, you know, I came to, and you know, and he's like, open the door. And I'm like, no, you know, I'm all right. And he's like, you're all right, dude. Like, just open the door, you know. And I opened the door. And so that was like the first time that, of course, they took him to the hospital and all this kind of stuff. So it was like, all right, so now things are kind of getting real. Now it's like, all right, I'm starting to experience these physical consequences as a result of my alcoholism. Prior to that, it was kind of just like, you know, Vito's kind of going down a bad path. You know, he's not reaching his potential. You know, things aren't going so well for him. But now it's like, all right, now these things are starting to happen. And, you know, I took another seizure shortly thereafter and, you know, and then I totaled a car shortly thereafter. And then all of a sudden I find myself in treatment, right, for the first time at the age of 19. And so that's what happened. So I find myself in treatment, and I remember going to this treatment center, this really nice treatment center in New Jersey. And I went to this treatment center. What had happened was my parents, you know, said either go to treatment or you can't live at this house anymore. Right. So easy decision, right? I'm going to go. I'm not going to treatment. Right. So I'm leaving. But what I found out was I don't do homeless very well. I lasted about 3 days, you know, I was uncomfortable. I'm kind of like, all right, this is not what it's, you know, cracked up to be. And I went back to my parents' house with my tail between my legs, and I said, I'll go to treatment, you know. And so that was my first experience with that. Went to treatment. I'm in there for you know, 35 days. And I share that experience with you mainly for one reason. So I'm in this treatment center for 35 days, and I remember getting out. And I remember feeling, you know, present in the community, you know, you guys that have been in treatment. I do treatment very well, right? I didn't do homeless very well. I do treatment very well. I comply with all the rules. You know, I'm kind of like, I'm not a trouble patient. You know what I mean? I'm not going to get in trouble or anything like that. I do treatment very well. And I'm the present community, all this kind of stuff. I remember leaving there. Now I had some clarity, right? So now it's like I'm 35 days sober, and I'm able to kind of look at my life and realize that, like, this is not the path that I want to go down. You know, this is not where I see my life going. I got to stop this stuff. You know, it's kind of like, all right, we're going to stop this stuff. And I remember leaving that place thinking, like, this part of my life is done with. I'll never drink again. I'll never do any drugs ever again. This is not good, you know. And within a day of leaving there, I'm loaded. And what happened for me was I gained a healthy fear of what alcoholism was. Because I can tell you that when I left that place, I was convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was never going to drink again. And as you've probably heard people say before, you could have hooked a lie detector test up to me the day that I discharged from that treatment center. And I would have told you that I'm never going to drink again, and I would have passed with flying colors. Because in my heart of hearts, I believed I would never go back to it. And literally one day later, I'm right back at it. And that's kind of like my story as far as alcoholism is concerned. You know, it's crazy because right before I came here tonight, you know, I went into this room, and it's the same room that I was living in, you know, 6 or 7 years ago. And I went into this room, and I knelt down to pray, and I looked over at my bed, and I was reminded of this time that I had left treatment. And I was there for about a day. I was literally there for like 24 hours. And I woke up the next day and I said, I'm done. You know what I mean? I can get sober. And my girlfriend came and picked me up, you know, and took me home. And all my sheets had been taken off the bed because my parents were expecting I was going to be gone for like a month or so. And all my sheets were taken off the bed. And this image just popped into my mind. What had happened was I was just laying on this bed with no sheets, no nothing on this bed, just sobbing. Because as soon as I got out of that treatment center, I picked up right where I left off, and I got home, and I just realized, like, I do not have control of this. I cannot exercise my will along these lines. I do not have the power to stop drinking. And I'm just sobbing. My mother comes into my room, and my mother is an amazing Christian woman, and she's sitting there praying. And I just remember, like, sobbing and, like, you know, the snot, you know, just, like, not a pretty sight, just, like, really, really crying and just like blowing my nose and just like for like probably like 20 minutes straight, you know, just like so overwhelmed. I was just overwhelmed by this thing. I just couldn't stop. It didn't matter how many detoxes I went to. It didn't matter how many times I had been to treatment. I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous many times. I had some experience with the steps, as a matter of fact. I had powerful spiritual experiences. And I'll tell you about that. Powerful spiritual experiences, and I found myself back at it again. And just feeling completely overwhelmed, completely broken. If you're sitting in here, you probably know what I'm talking. You know what that feels like, to be broken. I was broken. And I felt like I could never be put back together. So that's what began to happen. I began to find myself in treatment, and you know, one treatment center after another. So I get out of that treatment center. I'm there for a month. And literally like 2 weeks later, I'm back in this same treatment center because I go downhill quickly. And I'm back in this treatment center. I'm there for a couple weeks. And they brought this meeting of Narcotics Anonymous into this treatment center. And I remember this guy just sharing this powerful message. And The crux of this message was this idea of just surrendering. It was this idea of just giving up. And for whatever reason, my heart was open on that night. And I heard this guy. And I remember like crying in this meeting, you know, just being like touched. And the next day, my counselor calls me into her office. She says, Vito, you know, your insurance company just paid for you to be here for, you know, less than a month ago. They're not going to pay for you to be here anymore. So you have the option of either going home or you can go to Florida for treatment and for continued treatment. And it's funny because when I tell this story now, it doesn't like carry the same weight because like I would go to Florida tomorrow for treatment. You know what I mean? Like I'll go tomorrow. Let's go. It's getting cold out there. You know what I'm saying? Like it wasn't like some drastic, you know what I mean? I'll go to Florida for treatment. I'm like really sacrificing. I'll go to Florida for treatment. So, but at the time it seemed like a really drastic proposal. You know what I'm saying? Like I wasn't at that point where I was ready to take drastic measures to get sober. I just kind of felt like, you know, we'll figure this thing out. You know, let's not go too crazy with this thing. You know what I mean? And this seemed like a really drastic proposal that she had, you know, put before me. But I had heard this, like God had engineered this to where I had heard this message the night before, this idea of giving up, this idea of not trying to run your own life, this idea of just kind of taking a suggestion and doing what's asked of you. And so I was like, all right, I'll go, you know what I mean? I'll go to Florida and thank God that that had happened that way. Because what happened for me was I was placed in front of a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who were engaged in the work that is outlined in the big book. And these people were all about the steps. They were all about God, and they were having powerful experiences with this stuff. There was a lot of young people getting sober, and that was my real first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I wound up down there. I get this sponsor or whatever, and you know, truthfully, where I was going to meetings, it was kind of like expected of you. Like if you're showing up to AA, you're going through the steps. There really wasn't any kind of like, oh, you know, well, I'm not really into that kind of thing, right? It was just like, hold up, man. Like you're coming to AA. What step are you on, or what are you doing? You know, that kind of thing. So that's kind of what I was thrust into, and thank God for that. And so I did. I grabbed a sponsor and I started going through this step work. And So our book tells us that half measures will avail us nothing, right? That's what our book tells us. And so what my experience with that was, I started upon this journey through the steps with this guy. And I did, I did 1, 2, and 3 and all this kind of stuff. I wrote a 4-step. He gave me the instructions. I wrote this 4-step. I was completely thorough and honest on this 4-step. And then we go to do this 5th step. And once again, completely thorough and honest, you know, and I really did. Like, I bore my soul to this guy, you know, and it was probably like the first person I had been completely honest with in probably my entire life. You know, I was very much kind of like, you know, the actor that they talk about. You know, I'll put on this mask when I'm with these people, or I'll talk this way when I'm around this crowd. It was very much kind of like I could never just be who I am. You know, I could never just kind of be my authentic self. Always worried about, am I fitting in, you know? But during that 5th step, I felt like that was probably the first time in my life where I was just like, all right, this is who I am. I'm just going to put it all out there and take it or leave it kind of deal. And it was cool. It was a powerful experience for me. But I told you that I was kind of like doing the half measures thing. So what that looked like for me was, we're in this we're doing this 5th step in this clubhouse, right? They had like these, it was like meeting rooms, and they had like little side rooms where you could do work with your sponsor and stuff like that. And, the room that I'm in has this window that overlooks the parking lot. So we're doing this 5th step in this room that has this window that overlooks the parking lot, and we complete this 5th step, we finish. He gives me the instructions out of the book. He says, you know, now you're going to hang out here, take an hour, prayer, meditation, consider the first 5 proposals, da da da, whatever. He gives me the instructions out of the book that I'm supposed to do for the next hour. So he's like, all right, well, I'm going to go. You know what I mean? There's no reason for me to sit here. I'm out. And he goes, gets in his truck. And what I do is I walk up to the window. I wait for his truck to leave the parking lot, right? I go get in my car, and I'm off to the casino. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know I just had this powerful experience, all this kind of stuff, but an hour of prayer, meditation? Like, I still today, when I give people, I sponsor that direction, I'm like, they're not actually going to sit quietly for an hour. You know what I mean? Like, no way. I was like, they'll probably last like 20 minutes. You know what I mean? But at the time, an hour of prayer, what's going to happen in that hour? Is God himself going to come down and speak to me during? It seems like a silly kind of idea. It seemed very silly to me. I thought, not really feeling that part. You know what I mean? And like, so there's that half measures thing. I'm not going to take that direction. I'm not interested in doing that. And that's what I did. I waited for his car to leave the parking lot. I went and got in my car, and there I was, off to the Seminole Hard Rock and Casino, right? That's where I went. And, that'll be a little theme in my sobriety as well. And I will tell you that, you know, I'll do anything that'll get me out of myself. I'll reach for anything that'll make me feel whole. Right. You know, not just drugs now. In many ways, my sobriety the past 5 years, in some instances, has me running from God and then running back to God and then running from God and then running back to God and then running and reaching for something that I think is going to make me feel whole, realizing it doesn't, and then running back to God. And then me running and reaching for something else that I think is going to make me feel whole, realizing that it doesn't, and then running back to God. In many ways, that has been my experience in my sobriety, and I'll tell you a little bit about that when we get to that. So that's kind of what happened. So I do this half measures thing, you know, and I stayed sober for a while off of that. And I will also tell you that I had very powerful spiritual experiences during that time. I felt the presence of God like I had never felt in my entire life. I don't ever want to stand up here and discount that experience that I had for that year and a half that I stayed sober. I wound up going and getting involved with this church. I wound up getting baptized and just really powerful stuff. And like to this day, one of the greatest days of my life was like doing that kind of stuff. The reason I share that with you is to tell you that in my experience, spiritual experiences are temporary. There is no permanent fix here in that I'm going to go out and get well, and then I'm going to back away from this whole God thing, and we're going to be good. Have I recovered from alcoholism? Absolutely. Absolutely. But I cannot go out and have this really powerful experience with God and feel like I'm good to go from here on out. Because for me, it just doesn't work that way. And I think our literature tells us that my sobriety is based upon some kind of daily maintenance. You know, some trying to deepen my relationship with God on a regular basis, not just staying stagnant. And so that's what happened. I had like, you know, this kind of like half measures type experience with the steps. I'm around a whole bunch of people that are doing this deal. And I just kind of slowly faded away. For me, that fade is always like a slow fade. It's like, it's not, there's no black and white to it for me, right? Like I stayed sober another 10 months after that. I wound up staying sober for a year and a half. You know, I remember going and picking up my 1 year coin and, you know, down there they make like very, I don't know what you guys do around here, but they make like very, like a big deal out of birthdays and stuff. Like they'll bring a cake in, they'll call you up in front of everybody. Somebody will like say something really nice about you. You know what I mean? You know, come get your coin. You know what I mean? Then you get up and say something really nice about yourself. And you know what I mean? Like, you know, and like, if you really want to be humble, you like call the newest guy up in the room and like give him your coin, you know, like, let me just give the new guy my coin. You know, like it's like a whole big deal. And I remember getting that 1 year coin and just feeling like, you know what I mean? I don't know if I consciously thought this or what the deal was, but I was kind of like, hey, Alcoholics Anonymous, I appreciate what you've done for me. You know, but I've kind of got it from here on out. You know, I'm kind of good to go from here on out. And that couldn't have been further from the truth. And the truth of the matter was, is that at that point I was delusional. And like my sponsor tells me, he's like, you know what the problem is with being delusional, you know, is that you don't know you're delusional. That's the problem. You're asleep dreaming you're awake. And that was kind of what was going on. So I was asleep dreaming I was awake, you know, and I stayed sober for another 5 months after that. It wasn't like the next day I was back at it. You know what I mean? I stayed sober for a little while longer and just kind of slowly fading away from everything that had gotten me to the place where I was. And a couple months before I drank, I'm still living down in Florida at this time. I was in a recovery house for like a year. Now I'm living in like a little condo with a couple guys that I got sober with. And a couple more months before, and then my father called me one day and was like, hey, you know, you still going to those meetings and this kind of thing? And well, no, you know, I'm not, you know. And he was like, that started into an argument. Now we're arguing about that. And then before you know it, we're not speaking. And, so now we're not speaking. Now me and my father aren't on speaking terms. We're not talking to each other. I'm living down in Florida. He's up in Philly. And, a couple months after that, you know, his birthday rolls around and it was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. You know, I'm not talking to my father on his birthday. It kind of hurt me, you know, it hurt me deeply to think about that. And, you know, I went over and down there and at the gas station, they sell liquor and alcohol and all that kind of stuff. I went over to the gas station, you know, I bought a 40 and I went over to the casino parking lot and I drank that 40, you know, was 17 months sober. And then, you know, got my car, drove to the worst neighborhood I could find and got out and started talking to strangers. You know what I mean? so that was kind of like what happened, right? It was like, bam, just like that, I'm off to the races again. And, you know, and what happened then, you know, I was kind of thrust into probably what were the darkest couple years of my life, mainly because I had an experience with AA. More importantly, I had an experience with God, right? I felt the nearness of my Creator. You know, I had felt like I had this connection with that which created me, which for the people that have, that is a very powerful experience to have. It is life-changing. And for me, it was life-changing. And now I'm living in this darkness. And I just couldn't seem to get back. You know, I would show up at AA, you know, and I'll try to just try to, okay, I'm going to go move into this recovery house and I'm going to get sober. And I'd stay sober for a little while and then I'd be back drinking again. And then, all right, I'm going to go to treat, you know, my parents, one time my parents showed up in Florida. You know, my roommates came upstairs and like, Vito, come downstairs. You know, we need to talk to you. I walk down. It's like my whole family's in the living room. My family lives in Philadelphia. You know what I mean? We're in Florida. I'm like, oh, God. You know, and it's like, and I went to treatment. They convinced me to go to treatment. And then I'm in treatment for 30 days. And I get out and I'm right back at it, you know, or I'm going to go to detox, or I'm going to, you know, at this point I knew, you know, I knew all the AA gurus in this particular part of Florida. So I'm going to ask like the, you know. You know, the real experienced AA guy, you know, the super sponsor. I'm going to ask that guy to sponsor me. That'll get me sober. You know, so I'm doing a third step prayer with him out in the, you know, the parking lot of a clubhouse. We're doing a third step prayer on our knees in the parking lot. You know what I mean? And then like a week later, I'm drinking again. You know, it was just like, I just couldn't get back. I wanted more than anything to get back. And I just couldn't find myself getting back. And, you know, eventually my father was like, yeah, you're coming, you know, I got you a plane ticket. You got a flight you're catching today. Go get to the airport and come home, you know. And I did. And I went home and I flew back to, you know, Philadelphia. And now I'm trying to do it in media. So where I'm at now, I'm going to meetings and I'm showing up at these meetings. And now I'm telling them, like, I was like, hey, this ain't AA. You know what I mean? Like I had this experience with like the big book and the steps and all this kind of stuff. And like these guys, you know, 25 years sober sitting around, gets around to me with 10 days. And I'm like telling them like, you guys don't know what you're doing. You know what I mean? How many of you have even been through the steps? You know, like I can't string together 2 weeks. You know what I'm saying? These guys got 25 years and it's not my place or not to judge them or whatever the case may be. But like, that's a little bit out there, you know? And so that's what I'm doing. And I'm showing up these meetings and then eventually, you know, and then I started dating this girl, you know, and let me tell you something, like I would be able to string like a couple months together you know, that was my experience with it. Like I'd be able to put a couple months together and then I'd be back out at it, you know, and then I'd be able to put a couple months together. And I'd be right back out at it. That was like this pattern I had going on. So during one of these couple months, you know, things, I met this girl and started dating, all this kind of stuff. And, she was 20 years old. She was turning 21. And, I definitely devised this plan, but she was turning 21. She wanted to go to Florida to celebrate for her birthday. So the deal we made was we're going to go to Florida to celebrate your 21st birthday. And at the end of the week, I'll check myself into detox. That was the plan. It was like, listen, my sobriety date was planned. Okay. So I don't know. Some people say whatever. I thought about this last time. You know, I was telling my story. I think my sobriety date literally was planned because at the end of that week, I checked myself into detox. She drove me there. We went there. And now, listen, I had been to this detox several times before. I knew the people there, you know what I mean? I went to treatment after that. This treatment center they brought me to, I had been there. This was my third time in this particular treatment center. So there wasn't anything new going on. You know, so I'm in this treatment center again, and I just remember being, you know, just being so broken being in this place, you know, just like anything would bring me to tears. You know, everything made me cry. I began to kind of like, you know, I'm sober now a couple weeks and I'm like, I'm really looking back and seeing what I'm doing to my family. And let me tell you guys, because I usually start off talking about this. I come from an amazing family. My parents are still married today for over 30 years. I never wanted or needed for anything in my entire life. I have three brothers, two parents, right? No one's alcoholic or addict in my family. I didn't have anything to point to when I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and say, this is why I am the way I am, because there was nothing to speak of. So that's the kind of family that I come from. And so I remember going, so I'm in this treatment center and I'm just like really, you know, just kind of whatever. And, you know, I wound up asking this kid to sponsor me and we start going through the steps. And, again, it wasn't something I had never had any experience with because I had had some experience with the steps. But we started on this journey again, you know what I mean? Did 1, 2, and 3, did another fifth step and all this kind of stuff, thorough and honest again, all good stuff. And I remember we had gotten up to the ninth step, At this point, I was still in this treatment center. The cool thing about this place is they would allow your sponsor to come and pick you up and take you out and do step work, or your sponsor would come pick you up and take you to meetings, right? And in many ways, I think that was kind of like my saving grace. Was like, before I ever even left the comfort of a place like that, I was already engaged in the solution that we have here. And so I'm getting out of this treatment center. I'm about 3.5 months sober at this point, and I was going to move into a recovery house. So I'm getting out of this treatment center, 3.5 months sober. I'm moving into this recovery house, but I wanted to come home and see my family for a little bit before I moved into this recovery house in Florida. And so I tell my sponsor, like, yo, I'm going home. I'm going to go home for a little while, see my family. And he's like, that's awesome, man. That's a great idea. He's like, that's perfect, because it's time for you to start making amends. And I would imagine you did a lot of your damage at home. So here's a list of 3 people that you're going to make amends to when you go home. Didn't seem so perfect to me. Sounded like a terrible idea, as a matter of fact. Now looking back on it, the reason it sounded like a terrible idea is because I had been sober before. You know, and I'm thinking, I was sober for 1.5 years, and you want me to go to my family and make amends to them with 3.5 months. What kind of weight is that going to hold? That's not going to mean anything. Because when I got my year sober, you know what I did, right? I got 2 coins, and I mailed 1 to my mom and 1 to my dad, right? 1 year sober, right? 5 months later, I'm drinking. Okay. So that's the kind of devastation I caused my family, right? I'm like, hey, let's celebrate. Everything is all good and well. Your son's recovered. Everything is great. You know, this torturous life that you've been living as a result of his alcoholism is now over. Here's his 1 year coin. 5 months later, I'm right back at it. So I'm thinking, you want me to go make amends to who at 3.5 months? That doesn't make any sense. But at this point, and it's one of the reasons that I'm such a huge proponent of jamming our new guys right into the steps, is because I was still very broken at that point. I was still at that place where if you gave me a direction, I would take it. I can't say that I'm always at that place still today, right? When I experience enough pain, yeah, I get back to that place. And I have gotten back to that place over in the years of my sobriety, I have. But those first couple months, man, like, if you told me to do something, I was afraid I was going to die. And I, to my core, I thought I was going to die. So when you told me, hey, you're going to go make amends to your mother, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking it's a terrible idea, but I'm going to take the direction. And that's what I did. And he told me, you know, he said, you're going to go home and make amends to your mom. And I remember going home, and, you know, our book gives us very clear-cut directions, especially in the amends part. I mean, they break down every different thing. If it's a family member, a business acquaintance, this, that, the other, tells you how you should approach these amends, what to do, what not to do. And I remember, you know, going through it, I'm reading this and that. I remember approaching my mother, and she's in the kitchen or something like that, or somewhere. And I remember walking in, and like, I would, you know, of course, right beforehand, I'm like praying. Right, those of you that have made amends before, you know, I'm praying, my heart is beating, I'm sweating, and I'm going to go make this amends. You know what I mean? I go downstairs, I walk into the room, and like somebody else would walk in. And I was like, really? Okay. All right. So then I'll give it another shot, maybe the next day or something like that. And like the conversation would go way into left field, and there was like no way to bring it back to make this amends, you know? Just like, what's up with that, you know? And I'm reading through this thing where it says what we're supposed to do. And I come across this line that says, when making amends to our family, it says we sit down with them and frankly analyze the past. So we're just going to sit down and we're going to talk about what it was like, right? I can do that. So I went to my, again, I'm praying, you know, the whole thing, and my heart's racing, I'm sweating. I go downstairs, and my mom's in the kitchen, and I said, Mom, I said, what was it like for you when I was out there doing what I was doing? What was that like for you? And, you know, and what happened was she just got up and left the room. Right. That was my reaction. I'm like, really? Like, all right, you know, I just did exactly what the book said. You know what I mean? This is what happens, you know, but she just got up and left the room. And, you know, and so I sat there for what felt like a very long time. It probably wasn't very long at all. And she came walking back into the kitchen with her diary in her hand, open to a particular page. Yeah. And now I'm thinking I really should have kept my mouth shut. You know, this ain't going the direction I had planned at all. You know, this is not good. And but she had her diary open to a particular page, and she said, Vito, if you would really like to know what it was like for me, then you go ahead and read this. And and I did, and basically what it said was, it said, God, you know, you have to save my son. I don't think I'm strong enough to bury him. You have to save him, God, because he's going to die. And she said, that's what it was like for me when you were out there doing what you were doing. And, and she began to cry, and I began to cry. And what an amazing experience to have with your mother at 3.5 months sober. It's the experience that I believe our relationship, it's the foundation upon which our relationship has been built for the last 5 years, I believe, truly. And, and I was able to make that amends to her, and I was able to clear up some other amends and stuff, you know what I mean? The bookie in Florida, you know, betting one too many football games all of a sudden, you know, the debt gets a little higher than I'd like, and now you don't hear from me. That kind of amends. I don't know if you guys can relate, but, that type of stuff. So now I'm going to my pocket. I'm making the financial amends. I'm going to meeting up with this guy. I'm going to pay you back. Right. The idea is I want to be able to walk this world a free man. I don't want to have to look over my shoulder everywhere I go. If I'm right now, I'm living in the town that I grew up in. Right. I used to live in such fear that if I pulled into a gas station and I saw someone that I had graduated high school with, I would turn my car around and go to a different gas station. Okay. That's not how I want to live now that I'm sober. I don't want to have to live that way. And, just for fear of, listen, even if I didn't even do anything to this person, I didn't owe them any money, they didn't owe me any money, there was no bad blood, just for the sake of, hey, Vito, what are you doing with your life? Like, just to avoid that question, I'm going to a different gas. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't live like that anymore. And it's not because, like, God has done some cool stuff in my life and now I have, like, a real job or any of that. Like, in my early sobriety, I was able to get to a place with God where I could just be honest about where my life had been, if it was appropriate. You know what I mean? If it wasn't appropriate, I'm not going to, like, put it out there. But, like, I could be honest about where I had been and where I'm at and just feel, like, confident in who God, you know, who God is and who I am and where I'm at. And it was just all good. Because I felt like I was right where I was supposed to be. There was that fear had just been lifted, you know? And I think in many ways that's kind of what the amends process has done for me as well, right? Making those approaches. I don't have to look over my shoulder anymore. And so I continue along that process. I go back to Florida and I'm living in this recovery house now. And I'm there for a couple months, and I'm about 6 months sober at this point, and I'm getting ready to move back home because I'm still dating that girl or whatever. You know, listen, that was the main reason I was moving back home. You know what I mean? I would have told you probably like even up to a couple years ago it was because I wanted to go to school and all this kind of stuff. The girl was back at home. All right, so I moved back home. Right, I'm 6 months sober. I moved back into my parents' house. I started going to school and stuff like that, but I moved back home, and I remember when I was leaving there. And I went to my sponsor. I'm like, yeah, man, I'm getting out of here. I'm going back to Philadelphia. I had a powerful experience with this stuff. You know, it was the first time I had ever done any amends. I had never taken that step. You know, and I once heard someone say, like, you can do steps 1 through 8 without ever getting off your couch. You know what I mean? Like, you don't even have to leave your couch to do steps 1 through 8. So, I mean, it's all great stuff. You know what I mean? Giving your life to God and taking an inventory and all that kind of stuff. But, like, step 9 is, like, this is some true action here. You're going to go knock on some doors. You're going to go face to face with some people that you've harmed. And you're going to explain to them where you were wrong. And you're going to try to make it right. So this was powerful stuff for me. This was the first time I'd ever done this. And I did this amends process. Now I'm getting ready to come home. We've gone through the rest of the steps and all this kind of stuff. And I wasn't sponsoring anyone at that point. I was 6 months sober. And I remember him telling me, he's like, Vito, okay, so you're moving home. That's great. He's like, Vito, listen to me. If you need to find someone to take through the steps as soon as you get home. He's like, if you don't, you will not stay sober. Like, he put it that clear. There was no suggestions going on, all right? He was like, you're going to find someone to sponsor. You're going to take them through the steps. And then you're going to find someone else to sponsor. You're going to take them through, and you're going to repeat that. And he's like, if you do that, you have a good chance of staying sober. If you don't, slim to none. And again, I don't know why, but I heard him. And I had caught fire with this thing at this point. You know what I mean? Like this fire had been lit inside of me that no man could put out. There was like this message welling up inside of me that I just wanted to tell you about. I wanted to tell you about God. I wanted to tell you about the steps, right? Whether you wanted to hear me or not, you know what I mean? Like I would go into meetings and it was a little bit much now, you know, looking back on it. Some of these meetings I'd go in, I'm just putting my hand up and just like letting you hear it, you know what I mean? And then after the meeting, I'm the new guy, I'm cornering him, right? I'm like, yo, you ever been through the steps, dude? Like, I know we talk about them at every meeting, but I went through them and it's real. Like you actually get sober. The obsession is actually removed. Like it's amazing. You know what I mean? Like it was just like powerful stuff, man. This fire had been lit in me. Like you have to go through the steps. You have to try this thing. And that's what I would do, man. I would corner the new guy, you know? Some of those guys are still sober today, believe it or not, not by my power. But some of those guys have 4.5 years sober now, you know, and there wasn't a whole lot of that going on where I was at, you know, and that's what happened. My sponsor was like, you got to go back and find some people to sponsor, you know, and I got to experience the incredible joy that comes from that, you know, the incredible joy of watching someone else get their life back, right? Because, you know, me getting my life back, it's great and it's good stuff. You know what I mean? It's amazing, especially in hindsight to kind of look back on where I've been and where I'm at and all this kind of stuff. But in the moment, it's kind of like, you know, we're just kind of like trucking along. But for me to the process for me to watch a guy come in here and really just kind of be empty, just totally empty, to be hollow when they walk through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, to not know who they are, who God is. And then to watch them go through the steps and watch them light up, to watch them go get jobs and go back to school, to watch them get their families back, to watch them sometimes walk into prison sober, right? And that has happened twice with people. Last week, actually, someone that I sponsor, you know, to watch these types of things, to be there for his mother, for a shoulder for his mother to cry on. Right, these types of things. That these are the experiences we must not miss. Right, this sponsoring guys and watching them get their lives back. And so I know why when I was leaving Florida, why he was like, Vito, you have to find someone to take through the steps, because that is the reason we do 1 through 11. That is it. Nobody cares that I gave my life to God. Truly, nobody cares that I know what my defects are. Nobody cares that I wrote an inventory. Nobody cares. Go find somebody to help. That's what he told me. Go find somebody to help. Make your life about somebody else. And logically, all that stuff doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Spiritually, for whatever reason, it makes a whole lot of sense. And once you experience that, you know exactly what we're talking about here. And that's what happened. So I began sponsoring these guys and, you know, having powerful experiences and then again, shortly thereafter, I'm reaching for something outside of myself to feel whole. And I'm not going to go into great detail, but, you know, the pursuit of the material, right? And, you know, starting a little cell phone business deal where, you know, basically I'm making money off of people that are still in their active alcoholism. I'm profiting off of someone else's illness, one that I have recovered from not 11 months prior. And I'm not proud to stand up here and say that, but that's exactly what was happening. And all the while sitting in your meetings, sharing about what God has done in my life and what an amazing God I serve and all this kind of great stuff, sharing about that in the meeting. And then after the meeting, going and doing what I'm doing and making money and this kind of thing. And again, just reaching for something outside of myself, to feel whole. And then thereafter, different things would come into my life. And then, of course, being brought to my knees once again and going to my sponsor, you know, in that broken place and him pointing me towards the only thing that fulfills me, which is God. And thankfully, I've had people around me in my sobriety that will always continually point me back to God. I love to say, you know, most, you talk about happy, joyous, and free, most days I am. Most days I am. Let me not sell this thing short. Most days I walk around feeling like completely free. But that is not every day, okay? Because I will allow myself to get to a place where I feel in bondage again from whatever. Usually things that I create, problems I create, relationships I damage, harms that I do, amends I don't make, that kind of thing. So I'll fast forward a little bit. So I go back to school and you know, I'll tell you a little bit about some of the cool stuff that happened, right? I went back to school. I wound up, you know, I was never the student type. I never did well in a school setting. But I found out, like, the principles that we learn here in Alcoholics Anonymous work really well in those types of settings. It's not just for AA and meetings and this kind of stuff. And I began to practice the principles that we learn here in a university setting, right? And I wound up going back to school, and I wound up getting an associate's degree, and then I wound up getting a bachelor's degree, and I wound up going to work in treatment and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I had this really unique goal of mine that not many people have that come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to be a drug and alcohol counselor. And I know it's really unique. I know nobody thinks that way. And I thought I was the first. And, you know, so I pursued that, and I'm going to go work in treatment, all this kind of stuff. And to tell you honestly, up until about 4 weeks ago, I did work in like a treatment setting and all this kind of stuff. And it was cool. It was good stuff, but that's not where God has me right now. So I was able to go back to school and get a degree. And, you know, I remember like my college graduation, and my mother, you know, the ceremony stuff, like I'd rather, you know, I'm not about that. So, I'm like, yeah, Mom, I'm not going to walk, you know, like I'm not interested in walking. Like, they can mail me my diploma. It's all good, you know? And she was like, nah, that's not going to happen. She's like, Vito, during your high school graduation, your father and I sat on the edge of our seats wondering if you would actually wind up walking down that aisle and receiving a high school diploma, because we were unsure up until the last minute. She's like, now that I know you're receiving a college diploma, I want to sit in that stadium knowing that you're going to walk down there and get that diploma. So I did. I went and, you know, did the whole ceremony thing, got my diploma, and, you know, I just want to share briefly on what my relationship looks like with some of my family now, because that is some of the coolest stuff that has happened to me in my sobriety. Truly, if I were to sit here and think about what, if I were to rank like the gifts that I've received as a result of my sobriety, my family would be number one. That has been the coolest thing for me, because I lived in a house where, when I was living in that home, my mother placed one of those outdoor deadbolts on her bedroom door. You know, that was like what was going on in my house. And about 6 months ago, my parents were getting ready to go on vacation out of the country. They were going to some island for a week or something like that. And my parents pulled me aside. Now, I keep in mind, I have two older brothers, one younger brother. None of them are in Alcoholics Anonymous or need to be. None of them are alcoholic or addict. And my parents are getting ready to go on vacation. They pulled me aside and they said, Vito, we're putting together this will. And they said, if something were to happen to us, we want you to be the one to make sure that our last wishes are carried out. They said, because we know that you would be the one that we would trust most out of everybody. Mm-hmm. And that you would make sure that what needs to happen would happen. And, again, this is the same mother that had a deadbolt on her bedroom door a little more than 5 years ago. So if that's not an example of the power of God in my life, then I don't know what is. There's absolutely no human power that can transform a life the way that my life has been transformed. It's just not possible. I've never seen it. And that's the kind of relationship I have with my family now. You know, I was able to make amends to my father and brothers and all this kind of stuff, and have had really cool experiences with that. So that girl that I was dating, right, the one that drove me to detox, that little vacation we planned, her name's Jennifer. And about 2 months ago, we were still dating, and we're getting ready to go on this vacation. Her grandparents were celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary. And they invited the entire family, like extended family, cousins, aunts, uncles, whatever. And they asked me if I wanted to go to Mexico for a week. for the absolutely, you know what I mean? I'll go. But so that's what happened. So we went to Mexico, and I was celebrating my 5 years while I was down there. So it was like the first week in August, right? So the August 7th thing, I was going to celebrate 5 years while I was down there, and you know, this all just, it just kind of happened that way. And she had always kind of joked around, because she had known I was sober before, and she was like, yeah, you know, before I accept a ring from you, she didn't really say that, but she would be like, before we get engaged, I want to see you have 5 years sober, basically, kind of to like know that you're going to stay sober type of deal. And, so, you know, I devised this plan to where I was going to propose to her while we were in Mexico. And that's what I was able to do. So on August 7th of 2015, you know, I got on my knees before her entire extended family and, you know, gave a ring to my now fiance, Jennifer. What an amazing, amazing spiritual experience that was for me. Because I'll tell you quickly, I only have a couple minutes, but what happened was the next night, her father kind of pulled me aside. And, you know, and basically said, he has two daughters. This is his oldest daughter, the first one to get engaged. And, I don't know what that's like. I don't have any kids, you know what I mean? But I imagine that's kind of like a big deal, you know what I mean? For him to, am I right? I don't know. So like he pulled me aside the next night. He was like, you know, Vito, I just want to let you know, like, this is my oldest daughter. And, you know, I've kind of guided her up to this point, and from this point forward, it's kind of your job to kind of protect her and guard her heart and do what you're supposed to do. And what an amazing experience to have, one that I don't ever think I felt less qualified to do something in my life, you know, like that's, I don't know, like my default position is destroying, you know, the people around me, you know what I mean? Like, that's just what I've done in the past. And for him to pull me aside and say something like that, his most precious, you know, thing to say, well, now she's yours kind of thing, you know? I didn't anticipate going into that experience to think that it was going to be like spiritual in nature. I just thought it was going to be like, all right, I'll give her the ring. The grandmother will cry. It'll be great. You know what I mean? But it wound up being a very profound experience for me. And then, shortly thereafter, we got home from vacation. Of course, everyone wants to see the ring and this kind of thing. And the grandmother on the other side of the family, we went over there to show the ring to the grandmother or whatever. And as we're leaving her house, she grabbed my arm and, you know, looked at me with tears in her eyes. And she said, you know, Vito, this is my oldest granddaughter. Please take care of her. I don't know. For me, that's powerful stuff. That is what God has done in my life. God has allowed me to have these amazing experiences to become a part of this family's life. One that I would have been living in so much fear that I couldn't so much as face anyone. I mean, I lived in total isolation in my active alcoholism, right? I lived alone, completely alone. And, that's not the case anymore. You know, it's all a result of God's grace and his amazing love. But I'll thank Rich for having me out tonight, and I appreciate you guys listening. Thank you.